Is that a... You silly sod!
Welcome to NC Gum Bunnies, episode 18. This is Will.
This is Keith.
All right, so we got an exciting episode for you today. But first, we have the Rulet Gazette, which will also be fairly exciting.
Yeah, lots of news and announcements. Hopefully it won't be as long as the Muzon Minis news and announcements.
Yeah, hopefully not, hopefully not. Well, there's only two of us, so that cuts down some of that.
Nah, that's true. It does help.
Yeah, okay. So do we want to start the Rulet Gazette then?
Absolutely.
All right, so let's start with just normal events before we go into conventions. We have a lot of normal events coming. We're going to start this off with the weekend, June 7th. Okay, so we have four events happening June 7th.
Ducker.
We'll get to that. First event we're going to talk about is the Gamers Armory. In Raleigh, North Carolina, the Carolina Invitational that's happening June 7th at Gamers Armory.
Seems like a good day for an invitational.
Interesting note, that's a single list event.
Oh, really?
With specialists.
Yeah.
50 point.
I really like the idea of single list with specialists. I think that's where specialists really shine.
Yep. We have a event in Columbia, South Carolina at Firefly Toys and Games. It's a Carolina Invitational.
Sweet.
We have in Chattanooga, Tennessee, at Game On, What's a Lock and Load?
Nice. Yeah, that sounded like a pretty sweet convention when we were talking about talking with Rin. Well, I know it's not a convention, but a pretty sweet event, you know. Can't go to Lock and Load? Well, we're still going to play a tournament anyways.
Yep. It is a Carolina Invitational there.
Oh, sweet.
Yep. And I can't go to it, even though Rent has given me some shit on that.
Well, yeah, that and you didn't announce it in the last Gazette.
Yeah, because it wasn't posted when we did it because somebody took a long time to post our last episode.
Well, that might or may not be true.
And also, we had very limited internet access around that time.
That's true as well.
So that's going to be going on. I don't see any reason why, if you want to go to a Carolina Invitational, there are three of them happening that weekend.
Yeah. Well, and across, what, three different states?
Three different states. Chattanooga, Tennessee, Columbia, South Carolina, and Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yeah, those Asheville guys could even, you know, drive over to Chattanooga if they wanted to.
Yeah.
I mean, they went to Asheville. I don't see why they couldn't go over to Chattanooga.
The other thing happening June 7th is a charity event in Ashburn, Virginia at Huzzah Hobbies called Feet of Service, which helps the Wounded Warrior Project.
Nice.
Keith and I are going to be up there with Andy. We are trying to be up there. I got a very, very humbling email asking us to come up there to be media guest of honor. I was like, what, really? Us, media guest of honor? Okay. I guess yes. If that's what y'all are doing, I guess we have to be up there then. That yep. sounds fantastic.
How can you say no to that?
How can you say no? Oh, we want you to be the guest of media guest of honor at a charity event for veterans. I think I have to go to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That event is going to be a spell draft, mixture between a spell draft and a Who's the Boss. You pick your own caster from, it's like a list of prime casters. You pick your own caster, you bring it into any faction, and then you spell draft the spells on their card. It's freaking amazing.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that a lot.
Cheater.
I'm going to be playing P-Scar in Circle.
Cheater.
I'm looking forward to it.
I bet.
I want them PAL 16 Weapon Master Javelins.
Uh-huh. Dumb.
I know. It's so fun. Okay, so we'll move off June 7th, even though it's a huge, huge, huge weekend. Also, I want to mention, actually, before I move on, for the Feats of Service, the Wounded Warrior Project, even if you can't be there, you can donate. So, if you can't be there, donate.
Where do we donate at?
It's mentioned on... I know it's mentioned on both their website, for the Nova Nomads. And it's also mentioned on the Muzon Minis website. It's been posted up there as well.
Sweet.
So there's a whole bunch of donation links and everything like that.
So either go to Muzon Minis or Nova Nomads.
Yeah. And when this is posted, I'll probably put a link there too.
Sweet.
All right. So June 8th, there's a Who's the Boss in Wilmington, North Carolina.
I think I'm going to be too tired to go.
You think so?
Yeah, probably.
I don't know. I mean, I bet Andy will go.
He might. It depends on how he feels because
how tired he is.
It's in DC, isn't it? So it's like a 5-hour drive.
It's close to DC.
Yeah, so it's like a 5-hour drive. I don't know if we'll make it back in time, honestly.
It's true. We probably won't make it back in time. Because we're going to be hanging out with those guys probably pretty late, you'd guess.
Probably.
I mean, it's not on the schedule, but
yeah,
it'll probably happen.
That yeah.
All right. Then we have June 14th, an Unexpected Allies tournament at Game Theory.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
I can't wait. It's 25 points. You get paired with a random person every round to be your teammate.
Bring a buff caster.
Yeah, I'm bringing Zol.
Yeah, I'm probably either going to bring like Kane 1 or, I don't know, Haley 1.
Yeah.
Or 2. It doesn't matter.
And I'm going to be going for the win and when the win doesn't start, some funny stuff may happen. Like if, because Chris was talking about, Gareth could happen on the table. It's like, yeah, I could throw a glass down on Gareth. That'd be fun. Send him on out there, get himself killed, but kill other people in the process.
Yep,
that'd be good. Okay, so
in this Unexpected Allies, if you kill one of the casters, do just the battle group go inert, or do you lose the whole army, or do you know?
The way it works is the battle group does what it does. So if it's beasts, they go wild, and if it's jacks, they go inert, right? But the rest of the army's still on the table. So the game continues. So it kind of helps troops, like the troops you bring will still be impactful.
Right.
Even if your caster is not there. And the other side, in your buddies counting as friendly. So friendly buffs are really good in this format.
Yep.
Friendly faction stuff, less good because you only have 25 points. But friendly buffs, really good because that's like 50 points you can affect with it then.
Yep. Kuril Stone with Arcane Shield.
No.
Yes.
No. No. Oh my gosh. You could always play Striker 1 at that event. Striker 1.
You mean Haley 1 and Junior?
Oh, yeah. Haley 1 and Junior. Oh, that's
fantastic.
Miserable. I do not want to face that. Ugh. Okay. So that's June 14th. The next event we have that is not a convention, I believe, is going to be July 13th at the Augusta Book Exchange in Augusta, Georgia. It's a Carolina Invitational, 50 points.
Sweet.
Divide and conquer.
All right. We got North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Georgia.
Yep. And then July 26th, we have a invitational in Wilmington, North Carolina. It's going to be 3-list, 50 point.
Wow.
Yeah. I know. 3-list. Woo. That's going to be fun.
I know.
It's going to be a lot of models, too.
If Andy goes to that, he'll have to play something other than just Vale and Saren.
Well, he's already qualified, so he's probably going to start playing weird stuff now because he can afford to do that.
I suppose.
Now, that's what he's been talking about, at least.
Yeah, talk is cheap.
Maybe Brian will make it in before that, and then they'll like swap armies because that was being talked about.
That would be interesting.
Both of them get in. That'd be fantastic to watch. Okay, so all those events sound great. We have things happening all over. What is that, 4 states?
Something like that, yeah, 4 states.
Four states for invitationals, 5 states total for different events that are going on.
Yep.
Now, conventions. Oh my gosh, conventions. Okay, so June 6th through 8th, you already know it. We're not saying this one because it's nearby. We're saying it's because big is going to be Lock and Load.
Lock and Load.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to those pin sets that come out.
Ooh, is that going to be at Lock and Load?
Yeah, and they're going to be released online, too. A lot of them are.
Okay.
So I'm looking forward to those pin sets. I really, really want a Pistol Wraith Kane.
It's going to make it hard for me to buy all the Pistol Wraith Kanes if they sell them at Lock and Load and online.
It's true. It's going to make it hard to buy all of them. And there's 2 different ones. There's the glow-in-the-dark one and the non-glow-in-the-dark one.
Well, obviously, you get the glow-in-the-dark one.
And there's things like, I love the War Beast and Warjack pins too. They look so sweet. And of course the faction pins, like, why wouldn't you?
Exactly.
You got the option of a faction pin. Okay. Buy the faction pin. It's going to make me get a new case just so I can put pins and patches all over the damn thing.
Not to mention you just need a case.
I need a case to put my cases in.
Yes.
So, following that, June 20th through 22nd is StormCon in Charleston, South Carolina.
I'll tell you what, those South Carolinians are up in arms. They've got a lot of cons going on in the year. They already had GnomeCon, and now they got StormCon going on.
Yep. Right now, I know I'm going to StormCon. I've already paid for registration. I think I've signed up for events, if that's the one you sign up for events for right now. And I've reserved the hotel room. Like, I'm ready, set, go.
Some would say you're locked and loaded.
Except that's earlier in the month.
That's true, it is.
And I believe I have off that Sunday, too.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
They haven't denied you, like...
They haven't denied me like they have all the other events.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
No excuses this time. Yeah. The following weekend. And I believe StormCon has a Carolina Invitational at it.
Yeah, the cons positive. Do.
Yeah. And that's a 50-pointer.
Right. Is it also a Scarab?
Yes, I believe it's Scarab. I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure it's a double. It's a double bubble. It's Scarab and Carolina Invitational.
Right.
So then we have Contemporal happening the next weekend, June 27th through 29th in Raleigh, North Carolina at the Hilton.
I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yep, that's going
to
be...
I don't have to travel to.
Yep, that's a Carolina Invitational as well. It's 35-point, though. Two lists. We're not used to that 35-point too much down here.
That's true, we're not. That's really odd. I wonder why it's 35 points. I guess maybe it's kind of a newer to Contemporal.
It's newer to Contemporal. It may be a space thing.
It could be.
It could be those kinds of things. So I'm looking forward to that. I've paid for that, and I've signed up for it. So... I'm ready for Contemporal. I did not sign up for the coupon code, though. I didn't see that little vidy link right there. Ah, here's a coupon code. Oh, I guess I could have saved money if I did that. Ooh. All right. So, weekend after that, July 4th through 6th is GigaCon.
GigaCon, and...
we are now paid for and signed up and ready to go there. We just need a hotel room or something.
Or something.
Looking forward to that a lot. That's going to be a War Machine Weekend Invitational.
Yep.
Mm.
Maybe we should convince them to make it also a Carolina.
So if you can't make it one, make it the other.
Yeah.
I'm expecting to see a lot of great guys out there. A lot of people that we haven't seen since Orlando, and a lot of people who may be coming from even further away.
Keith Christensen.
It was dropped. It was kind of like subtly slipped in there. Oh, I may go to that event.
Yeah. We know you're coming. Yeah, we're meted against you. Don't worry about that. Bring your cricks.
We're totally meted against you. We have, like, no cricks in this area.
Except for Brian White.
Well, I mean in our individual area. Yeah. Not their area. We're not talking about the Georgians. We're just talking about Raleigh.
Fair.
But yeah, Brian White will be there. I'm almost positive Perrier will be there.
Yeah. He hadn't said anything.
But, you know. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised.
It's a good draw. I mean, look, if he's willing to drive to Orlando, I'm sure he'd be willing to drive to... Georgia.
Yeah, exactly. Love to see that dude. That dude's sweet.
Pretty cool guy.
All right. So, last con on the list, and this one's way far out. I just put it on here because I was like, well, I want to put it on here because it's the next one coming closest to it. And then after that, our season is kind of dies down a lot. And it's going to be Nova, the Nova Open.
Yep. When is that exactly?
That's August 28th through 31st.
So, it's a little more than a month. It's almost, it's more than a month away from. Like
from
between
GigaCon.
Yeah, between GigaCon. But we went to that last year, and we did okay. I didn't do that great myself, but the people that I went with did all pretty good, and I'm sure that they'll be looking forward to seeing... I guess Liam's not going to be there this year.
No?
No, he's like going to Dragon Con or something like that.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm planning on going this year.
Yep, I'm planning on going. I think, isn't Joe planning on going?
Joe is definitely planning on going because he and I are in talks about different lists and stuff like that because we're both going to be on the same team in the team tournament.
Yep, and then Chris, our PG, will be going there.
Yep, he'll be going as well.
I'll be going.
So that's at least four right there. Hopefully we can get more people.
Andy said that he was going, but that was before I think he decided to go move.
Yeah, but Andy's like, I don't know how he's going to be doing all these tournaments.
Yeah, well, he's only doing a few. I don't know which ones he's going to be going to. I imagine he'll be at Contemporal. I'm not sure when he's moving out back to Boone. So he may or may not decide to go to D.C.
Killbox guys.
Oh. Actually, Simon's pretty good, and a lot of those guys are pretty good.
No. I'm not talking about them not being pretty good. I'm talking about them having to deal with Andy.
Oh. Andy's not bad.
Uh-huh. You say that.
Yeah, well, you know, he'll fit in up there.
Is that a subtle jab, or is that talking about what?
Things not to be mentioned on the podcast.
I got you.
Okay.
Okay. Not a problem. So that is conventions. I'm looking forward to a lot of this. I'm gonna be glad after GigaCon, because then at least like there's some rest that happens. There'll be some rest, because upcoming we are not gonna get any rest at all.
Nope.
I've been talking with M on like, so which one of these conventions are you going to go to? Because if you want to see me, you have to come to some of these events.
What did she say to that?
She's coming to StormCon because it's a gaming convention. She's
oh, that's sweet.
Looked at the schedule. She's going to be coming with us.
I wish you both would have come to GnomeCon or even Scarab. You both would have had a good time at either of those conventions.
Well, they have different RPGs and stuff like that going to be happening at Storm. I'm trying to convince her to come to ConTemporal 2 because it's so close.
Yeah.
And I think she may enjoy it. So, I mean, it may be something that she's enjoyed. I don't think she's going to be making out to GigaCon, because that's just going to be a War Machine event.
Right.
And while there's going to be some non-War Machine stuff happening there because of the community,
right,
it's mostly a big War Machine event.
Well, did she have a good time at Crucible?
She spent a lot of time with me.
Right.
And I was doing a lot of coverage at the time. So gotcha. We were able to spend the weekend together while I was doing coverage.
Oh, that was cool.
So, I'm planning on actually playing at GigaCon, although, you know.
Yeah, I know.
What do you mean, you know? It's going to be hard.
Right.
I mentioned this on before, and just, this may be edited because I'm pulling behind the veil. I totally messed up a recording on our first news.
That's okay.
That I had with Chris.
That's all right. I told him already, so he understands that his news won't be on here.
I completely messed up, and in that one I was talking about, it's going to be hard to play at GigaCon simply because there are going to be so many people that I'm going to want to talk to and hang out with.
It's true.
It's going to be really hard.
It is.
So yeah.
Just do the Joe tactic. We'll just get you started nice and early at 9:30 in the morning.
Oh my gosh.
Don't worry, you'll opt out after that. And then,
I'll opt out. Yeah. All right. So do we want to go into the other news that doesn't have to do with events?
Sure.
Okay.
Where do you want to start?
All right. So do we want to start with the errata?
Sure. Let's start with the errata.
Okay. So we had an errata. I'm betting our listeners know that the errata came out. So what was in the errata was a few things. A really big thing, a fix to something before it ever came out, and a thing that kind of slipped through the cracks a little bit. I'll start with slip through the cracks, which was Pursuit. They changed to Pursuit. Pursuit only triggers on normal movement now. Like during your activation, normal movement, which means it no longer triggers on sidesteps.
Right. So when you're playing your Denny theme force and you put Pursuit on Mullet Karn, and then the opponent decided he was going to leash Mullet Karn forward, and then you got to make a full advance, and then Mullet Karn would, you know, charge forward at something, and then you got to make another full advance, and then he would sidestep, and you'd make another full advance, and then sidestep again and make another full advance.
Isn't Pursuit battle group as well?
Yeah, I believe it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, seems good.
So you get a mood like Deathjack and Nightmare around. And,
your caster.
And your caster.
Stuff, yeah.
And, yeah.
Your chickens.
Your chickens. Yeah, yeah, move your chickens into primo position.
Yeah.
So they changed that, so it's just normal movement. The theme force change, which we can get into a little bit of discussion about how the theme force is, like what this means, because the theme force itself needs to be talked about, but the thing that changed was they changed it so those Arcanists, the new power that they got, changed from gain a focus to allocate a focus.
Right. Which I mean,
is just the way it should have been.
Yeah.
It's obviously a slight typo that results in horrendous game imbalance if left unchecked. It's just like the Blood Hag. The Blood Hag cannot transfer in her bubble. And that was changed before it ever got released.
Right. So, one of the things I really like about that Kylissa list is the kind of like experimentation with the Arcanists. I mean, the change to power booster,
it adds a whole nother role.
It adds a whole nother role. And I really feel like that the power booster rule that's on the Arcanist really should just be the way it is on power boosters.
That was the only thing that upset me a little bit about the errata for the Theme Force and the Theme Force printer the way it was. I think just power boosters should work like that anyway with the allocation.
Right. Well, I think the fear with being able to allocate three focus to a Warjack via power boosters is that, let's say you have, you know, the Sentinels that have Jack Marshall in ret?
Yes.
Okay, so you have your unit of Sentinels, and then you power boost them, booster theoretically, if you could have three power boosters. I mean, I know the Arcanist is FA2, but it's assuming FA2. Assuming there may be in the future a character power booster or something like that, you know, then you'd be able to allocate it three and then get a Jack Marshall bonus for four.
But the limiting factor there is actually just the FAs. The FAs say within themselves what the limiter is. Because it would mean that on a defender that was attached to gun mages, you can already do the one. You only have one. But it meant for like Crix Jacks that you could have two focus because you have FA2 on the sirens. There are theme forces that increase the number of sirens, but they also increase the wanting to take Jacks, and Crix isn't taking a lot of Jacks to begin with. It could open up space in the faction for how it can actually run Jacks, because a lot of those casters are very greedy with their focus.
Right. Well, if Privateer does want us to run more Jacks in War Machine, I mean, I think this is a good direction to go, because you have the access to what makes Jacks powerful, which is the focus. And if your caster has the opportunity to either allocate focus to Jacks or not die, I think what happens is casters just choose not to die. So it makes the power of Jacks on the table very much smaller than the power of, say, War Beasts, because War Beasts have to rage up and use their fury, you know, or else the...
But even then, a fully loaded Jack doesn't really kill another heavy all too easy.
No, it doesn't.
Like, it's not easy at all to do that. And there are already factions that can allocate three with solos that aren't necessarily power boosting, which is the Reclaimers. And on top of the Reclaimer, Menoth gets the choir buff, which is worth more than one focus.
Right. And, well...
And they're getting it for each Jack that gets choired.
Exactly.
More than a focus benefit. Like, it's... If they want Jacks to be taken more, you just change your power booster. But that being said, even if they were to change power booster like that, this Theme Force would still be awesome, because the Tier 3 benefit is a freaking feat.
Yeah, it is a really big...
You can't run or charge. Your opponent can't run or charge first turn.
Well, I'm not done talking about the power booster
thing. Oh, yeah, keep going.
Okay, because the thing about the power booster, even if they do make that, the kind of the downside, though, is, you know, how much... I guess it's kind of like choir, but not quite like choir.
It's not as good as choir.
It's not as good as choir, and you're paying that extra cost for your jack. So, let's say if you were to get power boosters that were 1 point each, and you were able to take three of them. Just saying. So then you'd be basically paying, you know, three extra points for your jack. So you'd take a, you know, cost 10 jack or cost 9 jack to 11 or 12 or 13, you know, depending on the cost of the jacks. And, you know, the question is it worth it? Or, you know, do you say, well, taking multiple costs, multiple jacks then kind of diversifies the support cost, because now if you're still going to just take those three power boosters, but you're going to be able to spread it out. You know, you send one jack in a turn, but still you're still paying extra points for that jack to get them powered up. At what point does that become actually cost effective?
It's true. At what point does it become cost effective? But it makes the jacks instantly able to take more. I mean, right. They have the juniors coming out, so obviously they're kind of like pushing, like, how much focus can we actually give War Machine but still keep it from breaking the game?
Right.
Like, how much can we keep?
The difference between the power booster, which is something I really like, is although the power booster guy has to stay, you know, relatively close to the jack, if you kill the power booster guy, the jack doesn't go inert. Unlike the...
It's true.
Yeah. And that's a huge deal, because that's one of the major problems with the new Journeyman Warcasters, is the fact that it's really tough to keep them safe if they have any number of jacks on them. And you're like, well, if they just take a... If they're able to just snipe out the Journeyman Warcaster, your jack goes inert. They kill 3 points for the Journeyman Warcaster, and then plus the jack points that you ended up putting on them. So they can be a huge liability.
I mean, the one that's the least liability, I think, is Iacos. Because I've had Iacos on the table with Leviathan, and I never felt him threatened, because he's got stealth. Like, against Signar, they can shoot him, but not much can really shoot him off the table. He's got stealth, and he hangs back.
I would also say that Jakes and Junior fall into that category as well, just because of the Hunter. The Hunter allows them to stay far enough back to be safe. I mean, with the double focus range, a Junior staying, you know, 12 inches away from a Hunter.
I think Junior is kind of separate from the conversation, though, because he's not one of these new Jack Marshals, because sure. his buff isn't within his battle group only, so right. He also can contribute without ever having a Jack connected to him.
That's true.
And I don't think we're going to see anything like that again.
Right.
And the reason why Junior can be like that is because Arcane Shield is balanced for the faction. Like, your armor is lowered because of Arcane Shield.
Yes, we pay the Arcane Shield tax.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
You pay the Arcane Shield tax.
So, that's true. And Junior does contribute in that way. And Jake's sidekick is interesting, and I haven't had much chance to play with Jake's personally, but she seems like she may be worthwhile as just a super solo, as some of the other ones like Gaston also probably just really good as super solos as well. But we're kind of getting off the topic of focus to Jax, which is kind of where we're supposed to be at here. So
okay.
I think the change, if they were to go forward with the change to power booster, just errata it to be just like the theme force, I think that would be a really good change overall for the game. I think that it would make Jax a lot easier to be fielded. Not necessarily that people would start all of a sudden just putting more Jax in their list, but it's a step in the right direction if that's the end that...
Because even worst case scenario, it's on a Jack Marshall. The Jack Marshall gives it one to charge, and then it has three on top of that. A lot of the times, it's still not going to be enough to necessarily kill a heavy, depending on what the Jack stats are.
Right.
Or whether it even has the threat range.
Right. I mean, Sword Knights would be super, super amazing if they could get... well, maybe not super amazing, but they'd be a heck of a lot better if you could power boost their Jack up to three. Then you could Pronto it forward and then get the Jack Marshall bonus.
Yeah, but the problem there is you don't even have a power booster outside of one who's a character.
Well, you know, here's to hoping that the future will bring us...
We'll bring you more power boosters.
Yeah, I mean, the faction with the fluffy, most advanced Jax has, like, the least amount of power boosters, or maybe tied for the least.
Maybe it's because they trademarked the Cortex, so it's hard for innovation to really hit out there for, like... Those side guys to really booster the technology. They're just like, well, we're used to these old Jacks, so we could do that. So you put all those old power boosters out of business, and Arlen has a trademark.
I would say this about that. if power booster wasn't already faction specific, that might be a point, but it is already faction specific.
But there were probably before the lightning technology. Signar had Jax, and they probably had power boosters, and then Arlen came in, and Nemo came in, and they put their monopoly down, their electricity-based monopoly.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Emperor Nemo has not released the patent from the patent office yet. Like, there's a couple more years left. Like,
a couple years left.
You know, 50 years on the patent, and you know he's going on 100. So. He probably, that patent's probably almost up, is what you're saying.
Yeah, that patent's probably almost up.
Okay.
All right, so the big one everybody's talking about is the unit change.
Well, you know, this is the story I tell people when they ask me about the unit change, because you broke the news to me about the unit change. And the first thing I said to you about it was, I don't really see what the big deal is. I mean, most people I know do not play their models out of formation, and even if they do... It's really hard to kill off the unit leader and cause people to be out of formation, because I've already been doing that for a long time, and it's very rare that even though I'm trying to snipe out unit leaders, that I'm able to separate a unit, like that they can't just promote somebody else and have everybody still in command. So unless you were somebody that already kind of abused the unit formation rules, it's probably not even going to affect you, and you're not even going to notice. Most people that I know don't
I was trying to abuse it with Crix when I played Crix because of the way Undead works, but, I mean, it doesn't really affect Crix that much.
Yeah, it doesn't. So, I mean, I understand why people could be upset about it, but I think that putting things on the table, you're going to realize, you know, how big those command bubbles actually are and how difficult it is to really...
It is going to make units slightly tighter in formation because you don't want to spread out too far to where there is an easy center to just blow out and then half your units out of command.
Well, you say that, but that this is the problem, okay? The board is 48 by 48.
Mm-hmm.
If you have, like, two units on the table and jacks and stuff like that, it's really hard to spread them out in that max command range.
Depends on the
terrain,
too.
And still fit everything on. Yeah, and if you're constrained by terrain on top of that, you're going to find that you're not even really able to make optimum use of the command bubble that often. So most people, I mean, you're well within command range. If you have an 8-inch command, you figure if you're at max distance from the unit leader, your model can be, you know, almost 9 inches away from that unit leader on both sides.
The units that are going to be mostly affected are going to be those 7s and those 6s in the game.
That's true. But most things have an 8 or 9 command.
Because Mechanithralls, it's like impossible to run the unit without having them out of command to keep blast damage from affecting them.
Right.
Like, that's just the way the unit runs. You just have to have some of them out of command, or blast damage will kill them.
Right. But that's kind of like part of why they're so cheap, though, too.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
So...
I don't have a problem with that. Yeah. And Doom Reavers, at least, they have a low command. I think Nihilators might be affected by it, but I think it'll be fine.
Right. I mean, there are going to be a few, like you said, a few of the low command units.
Trolls is going to suffer the most from it because it's offensive buffing that you're looking at.
It's true.
Trolls will suffer the most because of things like having Pipers in their list and the Piper being shot out, which loses them 3 command.
It does, but I don't ever remember Brian spreading his trolls out 22 inches across the board for one unit. Like, I just never have seen him do that. So,
but it doesn't need to be 22. It just needs to be less than
18.
What it is,
which is still a huge,
it's a
area.
Huge bubble. I know, but depending on how you shoot out commanders, things like that, it will do some things with telekinesis and movement stuff.
It could potentially do things like. I'm going to say this the way Liam said it. If you're going to be that guy that spends a whole bunch of telekinesis to put a couple of my guys out of command so I can't put a buff, I want to play you. You sit me down across from you. That you're the guy I want to play at a tournament.
It depends on circumstance, because if one telekinesis can do it...
It's very situational.
And it depends on the buff. Like, if it's fell calls, yeah, I'll pull you out to keep you from fell calling next turn.
Yeah, but you're going to just fell call a different unit or apply fell call to something else. That can take advantage of it.
It depends on where that fell caller is at. Like, there's a lot
it's
of
true.
There's a lot of things going on, and if it's an actual use for telekinesis against a unit as opposed to before, which there wasn't really much of a use of telekinesis against units, makes telekinesis slightly better, makes AoEs slightly better because people will be a little bit tighter to protect, and especially now because people are going to overcommit. They're going to overcommit to needing that command staff. So that they can have the leaders nearby in the beginning.
Sure.
And then eventually it'll be... AoEs will get more of a buff right now, and then eventually it'll ease out a little bit more.
Right.
Because of the reaction to the change.
Right. The overreaction to the change.
Well, of course it's going to be an overreaction, because you overreact and then you adjust.
Right.
Afterwards.
But, I mean, it's still probably 9 times out of 10 better for you to just telekinesis your dude forward to get more threat range on something than it will be to try to telekinesis to pull one thing out of command.
I also don't think that this was targeted towards Morvana 2, like some people are saying. Well, if this was supposed to be a Morvana 2 change, it doesn't hurt her that much. I don't actually think they were shooting for hurting Morvana. I think Morvana was exploiting some of the rules that allowed this to show its at its most abuse, but I don't think this is targeting her.
Right, they could have done a lot more things to this to...
Well, when they targeted Asphyxius, they targeted him through Gradiation, and it took them time for them to target him.
Right. And I think they did it the right way, because I think you take nerfs like this, if you want to call it a nerf, in small degrees. Like, that's one of the things that I really enjoy about League of Legends, is they, you know, they notch things back a little bit at a time, or they notch things up a little bit at a time to make sure that they get it right. And it's better to, you know, just take it in small increments than to just go whole hog and blow things out.
I also don't think she's at the top of the list in terms of their errata cycle, because she just got printed.
Right.
Right?
Well, not just, but she's...
Well, she, reasonably considering other casters on the top tier.
Right.
Who are considered possibly problematic.
Right. And almost all of those are Mark 1 casters, right?
Yeah. And she's the first one that's Mark 2 that's really like that.
Right.
Okay. So, yeah.
Well, I don't know. Epic Haley was Mark 2. All the Epics
No, she's not. No.
Epics
no.
weren't Mark
It's 2. All Mark 1.
Okay.
Mark 2, the first Mark 2 caster for Signar, I believe, was Kara
Sloan.
Okay. Kara Sloan.
I didn't remember. I mean,
Kara Sloan, Connie, and Nemo 3, Striker 3.
Okay.
I've been all the Mark 2 Signar casters.
I didn't play Mark 1, and I didn't know how far into Mark 2 I started, and whether, you know, if they had came out earlier than in Mark 2 than I had started, so. Mm-mm. All right, well, do you have anything else for
errata?
Errata?
Well, we discussed units, we discussed theme forces, we discussed pursuit. To mention, I do like the feed on turn one for theme forces, to go back to that slightly.
Yeah.
Because it's really opens powerful. Up making really diverse theme forces that give you benefit, or completely changing something. One of the things I mentioned to Chris in the Here to Disappeared episode.
I mean, it's not disappeared, but I guarantee you don't want to hear it.
Yeah, exactly. Is you could do something like, for example, you could give, me and Chris talked about it, you could give Damiano a min unit of steelheads attached to him and make him a warcaster unit. And to add a rule. Or you could make steelheads in a unit of steelheads in his army, an elite unit of steelheads.
That'd be pretty sweet.
With like some additional stat bumps.
Yeah.
And one of the things also talked about was that for these theme forces coming out, with changing the rules, right? Having so many diverse rules and adding rules to cards and having like that whole mini feed on the beginning, they may want to move to, like, they could print out cards, just a card that listed all the tier benefits on it, so that you could just hand the card over to your opponent.
Right. That's an idea.
And it would have the rules on it, and it would just have all the rules, and it'd be really convenient. It's something that they could think about doing.
It's true. I don't know that that's something that Privateer, I mean, I can't speak for Privateer, but it seems like with the advent of War Room and its gradual improvement over time, that they...
I think it's a bit of time, though, before it can be considered ubiquitous, because tablets are going to need to be ubiquitous before War Room is really ubiquitous.
That's true.
Because right now, requiring players to have a tablet to do X, Y, or Z is not reasonable.
It's not.
So, conversion rules?
Conversion rules. Go ahead.
Okay, so they changed the conversion rules to protect their IP, is the way it's looking.
It does look like that. And I think that people's main...
Oh, yeah, and I also want to say, before we go into this, this feels like a marketing / lawyer decision on PP's part. It feels like it definitely has that behind the curtain there.
Right, and I think that the major misconception about this change is that... it is just for Privateer Press filmed and directly sponsored events, from what I gather.
That's the way it's supposed to come out, and if it's treated as such, that'll be fine.
Right, and I so think this should have no effect on your local play. It should have no effect
It should
on
no
any,
have no effect on your big tournaments, for the most part.
It should have no effect on any convention tournaments that is not directly run by Privateer Press and or filmed by Privateer Press. So if you want to go to DICON, or if you want to go to Kingdom Con, or if you want to go to any of these major conventions where they're recording games, you should feel free to bring your conversions, even for any of the recordings, because those are not Privateer Press run events, and they're not Privateer Press recorded events, so these conversion rules should have no effect on the tournament. Now, if it's converted to the point where the model's unrecognizable to the other player, then that's a whole other matter entirely.
But that's
entirely.
That's a TO decision, though.
It is a TO decision.
I think they're going to end up scaling this back, because I think the reaction to it is going to be pretty heavy. And I can understand the reaction to it being heavy, because it is... it theoretically makes, and I understand it's in a limited format, but...
very limited. I mean,
theoretically, very limited. It is in the conversion guidelines, which is base Steamroller. So when a TO is reading it, because it's very easy to read over that, because a lot of people have read over it.
Right.
it's very easy to just skip the at Privateer Press and recorded events.
Right.
So not knowing ahead of time, like it requires you to contact TO ahead of time and be like, is this okay?
Exactly.
Is this okay? Especially when like you're flying to places and models and stuff like that, like you're flying models and
you go through enough headache as it is going through the metal detector, explaining to the police officer that you have your bombs genetically implanted inside the metal and plastic and that they have no worries about
genetically
it.
Genetically inserted Whatever. Inside the metals and plastic?
Sure. However it works. And then, you know, that
then you get there and you can't even play the model that you brought.
Right. Yeah.
Like under these guidelines currently, it could be possible that TO could say, oh, Leah, most of your models aren't allowed.
Yeah.
And if that happens, oh, I'm completely against that. That is not.
And that's not even the intent of the rule. I mean, I think like it's like you said, it's mostly there to prevent their.
I don't believe they're really a risk, though. Even without the rule, I don't believe they're a risk. Because when you look down on the table, the way you do at their events, it's just blobs of metal and plastic on the table.
Right. And not only that, but look at their predecessors, Warhammer. I mean, they've been out for, what, 50 years now? You don't think that they have
50 may be a little extreme, but I got you.
You get what I'm saying. And
they do all sorts of crazy conversions over there.
Exactly, and they've never been sued for anything like that, to my knowledge.
Yeah, to my knowledge, they haven't either. Look at Weird's policy is open, too, their conversion policy. And they're after Privateer.
Right. I mean, it's I understand why it would look like a good business decision to protect themselves, but it seems like a bad marketing decision considering their competition. And if they wanted to continue to grow their game at the rate that they've been growing it, I think that, you know, some more consideration might be taken by this, or maybe some more research done in the legal department.
Yeah, I think they're making this decision based off of a direction they want to take the company, not off of anything happening right now, because I think they want something like, they look at something like what Riot does, and they get them big old saucer eyes. It's a really competitive game.
It is a really competitive game.
It's a really competitive game, and it can have a really tight rule set. So it's like, people could watch this and enjoy this. What can we get out of it like that?
Right.
And that's like, if we want to put that on the table, we're going to need this legal thing just so we don't have to worry about it.
If they want to have, you know, a Twitch TV spotlight every month with a into the future with, you know, all of the major conventions that feed into, say, War Machine Weekend, mm-hmm. and then they wanted to maybe eventually slap their brand name on War Machine Weekend and have all that, you know, televised and everything else like that, then, you know, I could see, you know, maybe where they would want to have this kind of legal paperwork already ready and in the works to prevent any kind of possible legal ramifications to them putting it on TV or whatever.
I mean, it could have been worse. They could have just said, all your models have to be painted for you to play an event.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
Because that'd be fucked up.
Well, it would make the entry bar even higher than it already is. I mean, as a new player, you already have to worry about getting your butt kicked like 100 or so times before you can even get into to really even get into playing the game competitively. And then on top of that, then you got to worry about painting everything and then all that other stuff if that was the case. So I can definitely understand that. But do you have anything else to say about on this conversion thing, or do you think we covered it pretty well?
I think we covered it pretty well.
All right. I tend to agree with that.
Okay. Cephalix?
Cephalix.
Do you want to talk about Cephalix?
Sure.
Okay. So Cephalix got spoiled for the new No Quarter that's going to be coming out.
Absolutely.
So, Cephalix. I think they're going to be interesting by the looks of it. I think they have some obvious flaws, like magic attacks just rip them off the table.
They can. They seem to be a lot stronger against particular Horde matchups than they are against, generally speaking, War Machine that reason.
I'd agree. They have some good pieces. I am waiting to see how they're going to fall in terms of looking at certain theme forces and stuff like that allow Cephalix to figure out how much accessibility they have. They don't look like they're going to be generally available to Crix.
No, and I know that makes a lot of people sad. I know Liam, in particular, was looking forward to...
Exelon Gorshade 3.
Yeah.
As his pair, but he can't do it now. I myself was like, oh, I'll be all in on Cephalix if I can take them in Crix.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, can't take them in Crix. I'm out. Yeah. Like, I'm done. Unless they're able to take in Theme Forces, I'm probably not going to buy any of their models.
At this point, I mean, it does get hard to release. I mean, they released Convergence as an entire faction pretty much last year. And it's, you know, almost a year later. And although the entire faction is pretty much out there, there's still not a lot of Convergence in competitive play yet. I mean, it takes a while for a faction like that to really get going. And now they're trying to release a whole other faction.
Well, it's not a faction.
It's a contract. Again, and it's got to be difficult at best for them. And it's difficult to be able to really play them at the same time as well, because you only have one caster and a limited number of models to go with them.
We have other merc contracts, but I don't think mercs are starving for anything at this point.
Not really. I mean, they have good game right now since the advent of both the Earthbreaker and the Galleon.
And the TAC, I think. And the TAC. I think the TAC are very important towards that whole thing.
That's true. The TAC have been surprisingly... amazing release for mercs and for factions that can take them.
Yeah, that tactical arcanist core is awesome.
Yeah, they are. So, I didn't know how in depth you wanted to go into the...
I have a whole bunch of misgivings. Like, I love the Mindbender unit with the way they work, because I know people listening have probably heard a lot of the talk about how Cephalix work, because, like, the Mindbender has these little arc nodes in his army and stuff like that, and can do, like, an Adrenal Surge. He can do, like, a Blightbringer Field and Sprays, and I like that unit. But, like, the Agitator, which gives, like, plus 2 attack, plus 2 damage on Drudge Grunts and Monstrosities within a 5-inch bubble, sounds good on paper, but it's, like, a star action? So he's got to walk and do it? I think it's a very limited threat range for that bubble, and I think he's just going to die. He's got Sack Pawn Monstrosity, but I think he's just going to die. He's FA3, 2 points each. It's like a choir member that has to give battle by being near the Jack. It's like a whole army of ragmans. I don't see that working. I mean, I don't know. And I think
unlike Convergence, they're going to need a couple of more releases to kind of round out that contract.
Yeah, I think so too. Because they really need... Exelon Thexus is definitely built for the faction, because he's got D-Cell.
Yep.
D-Cell's great for that faction. But what happens when you don't have him with D-Cell?
I don't know.
And still, they just die to magic attacks.
Right.
And magic attacks, they can't stop them. Like, they need something that stops... magic attacks, so you're just gonna be like,
well, the other casters are gonna have, like, what's the one that Striker 2 has? Deflection.
Ooh,
it's the plus
deflection
2
is not
versus ranged magic or something like that.
I guess that's okay. That's not really okay at all, though. That's not good for them. That's not gonna help them enough.
Well, I mean, it's the other, you know, friendly faction buff that covers the control area.
It's like they need a shield guard who blocks magic attacks, and I don't even understand how that'll happen.
They just need, what is it? Doesn't Rhett have a dude that they can attach to their units that makes
them...
Yeah,
the -5 range.
Yeah.
-5 range on magic. Yeah. That could work.
Yeah.
The Cephalix, I think, need a little bit more before they're going to be there. I think their caster is great. I think Exelon's great. His spell list is fantastic. His feat is good. The unit changes seem like a bump towards him, because that's a lot of pushing he does.
Right.
In any freaking direction.
Well, it's kind of a bump for him and a bump against him at the same time, because that means you got to, you know, keep all those judges kind of closer.
He doesn't buff individual units. He doesn't buff units, though. He buffs the buffs in the faction seem to be individual.
Gotcha.
So
that's fine. Yeah.
But yeah, I may be selling my units of Drudge Slaves and Mind Slavers, because when I heard the release, I was like, 3 units, done. Got them, get them while they're hot.
That's true.
But yeah, somebody will get them with this stuff coming out. Anybody who's going to play Cephalix needs them.
Right, but they'll get them cheap, because probably a lot of people will be out on the faction now that they're spoiled and they're not as impressed, or they may not be as impressed with them as they kind of hoped they would be.
You need him for the Danny 2 Theme Force 2.
That's true. But a lot of people did already get them for the Denny 2 Theme Force at this point.
But if they're allowed in the, I really think they should be allowed, or at least some of them should be allowed, in the Gatsby 2 Theme Force. Because of all the things it says. I believe it says Cephalix Solos and Cephalix Units. Like, it's prepared for more Cephalix Units and Solos. And I think that's the tier list that we look at, because that would make him, that'd make that list very interesting, and he'd have tools to actually protect them.
Right.
And it's the whole contract's based around, hey, I'm Gatsby 2. I'm friends with the Cephalix. Like, it's that theme for us.
True. So, that being said, I think we're going to wrap it up here with the Gazette, and then the rest of the episode, where we are grateful to have our not-so-resident French person on our site.
We didn't even say that during the episode, and you're going to call him French now.
Yeah, we did.
Oh, we did?
Yeah, it's just the part we cut out.
Oh, it's the part we cut out?
Yeah.
Yes, we have one, Fatigant.
And we have a really good, I feel like a really good conversation with him about Scorn. Unfortunately, it is a bit long, so
we're going to break it into two parts.
It'll be two parts, so this week we'll do part one, and then the next week we will do the rest of it. So
yeah, it was a really eye-opening discussion for me personally, because there was a lot of talk in there that just helped me out in terms of thinking about the game.
Yep, and it'll help a lot of people take their game up to the next level. And it was a pretty fantastic conversation. So hopefully you enjoy it as much as we enjoyed having Fat Asian on. And we'll catch you next time on the Gun Bunnies.
All right, this is the Gazette signing out. This is Will.
This is Tyler.
This is Keith. And we got with us.
This is John.
Sweet. And this is John Demery.
Demery, yeah. No, this is Fat Asian from Muzon Minis.
Sweet. And we are very glad to have him aboard with us today. Through a little finagling, we were able to, coax him out of some time out of him with his wife. This is her weekend, or maybe.
No,
she...
actually,
go ahead.
It is her birthday millennia. It's kind of escalated, so I don't know if you have time for a short story, but
last week
it was Mother's Day weekend, and I was like, oh, it's Mother's Day weekend. Or first off, it was Mother's Day, and then Saturday it was like, well, it's Mother's Day weekend, and I'm like, okay, that's fine. And then this week she's like, well, it's Mother's Day week. I'm like, Mother's Day week was behind us. She's like, it's my birthday this week. And I'm like, okay, technically you're right. So it's her birthday is exactly 1 week after Mother's Day this week. So pretty much for the last 2 weeks she's been owning me.
We'll see. I mean, she's just one step away from Mother's Day year round.
Right.
Mother's Month.
I'm like, is it like your millennia? And like, my son's like, what's a millennia, Dad? I'm like, I think it's like 1,000 years. And I'm like, it feels like it sometimes.
So she got tired of you for an hour. She was like, or she was willing to give you a couple hours reprieve.
I talked her into taking a nap. So.
Oh. You're like, I'll watch the kids for a couple of hours.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, say no more?
Yeah.
All right. So, what are we going to talk about today? Well, it's great to have you on, John. It's great to have you
on. I'm glad to be here. I'm a big fan of you guys. So, you guys have a very clean podcast. It's fun. What I mean by that is your sound quality is good, and you get lots of guests, and it's interesting. So, it's pretty sweet.
I was about to say clean. God knows, I can't keep my tongue silent enough for that.
Well, not that clean.
Not that kind of clean.
Yeah.
No, not like PG-13 clean.
No, we don't do that. Yeah. Not often.
Well, we're actually pretty good. I mean, last episode we had a little slip up, but then we drank a lot, so.
Well, the amount of, whenever we have somebody who's on that isn't us, we generally have a problem.
It's difficult to make sure that people adhere to the... PG-13 policy. But
it's very hard.
It's okay. I mean,
are we actually PG-13?
No.
Do you edit out that stuff? Do you bleep
no,
us?
That's too much. That's a lot of work.
He doesn't bleep, but he tries to keep the language to a certain degree and tries to not keep things explicit. But if things are explicit, he puts the tag on it.
Right. So not like a sailor.
Right.
Yeah.
Not like a sailor.
Yeah. And just for the record, you guys can be anything you want to be on the network. So we just do our podcast as non-explicit if we can.
We want to be able to reach as many people as possible.
Right.
Exactly. See? You got it. Yep.
Can't argue with that. Makes too much sense.
Yeah.
Damn it, logic.
So, what I was hoping we could talk about is some Scorn, since we have, the Gun Bunnies resident Scorn player and the national Scorn player both here on the mics. I was hoping that we could get a little bit of cross-pollination of ideas. And really, in the podcast that I listen to on a regular basis, I really haven't heard a lot of Scorn talk. I feel like they've been left out of the conversation for a little while now, and I think that would be good to bring them back in.
Well, I mean, let's face it. Scorn are kind of like those, like, it's that odd kid who always just kind of like sits in the corner of the room and mumbles to himself.
I think that's just you, Tyler.
Well, that's not the point, but...
I think Scorn is sort of an underrated faction. A lot of people want to blame the faction, but I think the faction is just fine.
I definitely agree. They definitely have a lot of strengths. Their casters are not necessarily like over the top. They don't have anything really crazy. Their War Beast are what's most renowned about them. They have a bronze back. That thing just kills everything. But I mean, they're
really actually Moloch Karn is pretty incredible too.
Yeah, that guy does work. That's true.
Well, Fatewalker is an extremely powerful ability.
Like the teleport animus, essentially, is what it is.
Yeah.
It's it's like a poor man's teleport.
It's a poor man's teleport, but still, it's an animus.
Yeah, but it's an animus that can go on any list. And then if you think about the way Fatewalker combines a lot of the other things Scorn does, it's sort of like having a, POW 15 Weapon Master gun. Which is not very common if you think about it. So the only problem is he's a little bit squishy, so protecting him can be kind of difficult at times. Yeah, but he's sort of a high risk, high reward kind of thing.
Yeah, but it's like Rate of Fire 3.
Yeah.
it's a lot more than that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, potentially, but
he's,
I mean,
he's just really, really powerful piece. And he's the piece that I find that I reach for the most when I play Scorn, just because I enjoy playing him. Because anytime you have the power of movement, you have options, and having options is always good. So,
and man, you can crank the crap out of his movement.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's probably where Scorn's strength is. Really, is they have a lot of things that affect the movement of the game, with things like easy access to Pathfinder and +2 speed with rush, or not speed. I guess it's +2 inches of movement, but
close enough.
Yeah, and then they have both Makeda's. Actually, all both Makeda's.
you're right. There is no Makeda 3.
Actually, Makeda 3 does something a little bit different.
I'm not a fan.
I guess I don't want to get too much into it, but the reason why I like her, she can kind of get in there and sort of bait some good attacks coming her way, and her defensive stats are good enough. As long as you're really good at eyeing that, like not getting her killed, but giving your opponent the opportunity to make a mistake and waste some attacks on her.
Yeah, I'm always leery of giving my opponent the option to dice me.
Right. Yep. That's something to consider. It's also something that trolls do extremely well.
That's true.
So I learned that from watching Chad play. He does what I call the troll rope-a-dope a lot, and then she allows you to kind of bring that play style into Scorn. And then she also does a lot of work herself, which is nice. When you get work out of your Warlock, then you're kind of ahead. Although she doesn't buff her army that much except for the feet. So,
and I think even choices. I think even her feet is kind of lackluster too, actually.
Yeah.
Well,
anyway, I'm kind of like all over the map, but
I got a question about Makeda 3. How many games have you played with her?
None.
Okay.
but I have watched her play. And I actually don't play that many games of War Machine. I think this year I've played maybe 6 this entire year. Plus what I played at TempleCon, and that was Kador.
Right.
I just picked up Kador for the first time at TempleCon because I didn't have room in the van for my models. So Nigel was like, "Well, you could just play mine." I'm like, "All right." So
turns out Kador is actually pretty good. But
yeah,
as an aside,
they really are.
I was actually talking to Will about that a little bit on the way, not to detract too much from the Scorn conversation, but I was saying, because I was playing Striker 3 for the first time today, a couple of games, and I didn't do so hot with him, but I had a blast playing him. But yeah, I was saying it's nice to actually put down an army on the table where every model is threatening to my opponent, whereas before in Signar, you put down a bunch of POW 10 pop guns, yeah, it's threatening to the infantry, but it's not threatening heavies. It's not threatening casters. You know what I mean? When you put Striker 3 on the table and you can Fury up, you know, that extra 3 strength, you know, and in a list that's designed to really take advantage of that, every model on the table is a threat to heavies or casters or everything alike. And that's just something that in Signar, I've never really felt like I was able to do very well. So
Fury is a hell of a spell.
It is a hell of a spell. But getting back to Makeda, I know that Tyler has actually played Makeda 3 at least once. I don't know how many times.
I've played her probably about 4 or 5 times now.
4 or 5 times.
And I think I've won like 3 games with her. I mean, I'm over 50% with her. But like my problem with her is that she's just kind of a derpy caster. You put her out there and you're like, you want to go for my caster? Do you?
Yeah.
And then they're like, no. And you're like, well, crap.
So yeah, don't get me wrong. I don't think that she is a powerhouse caster. I just think she's interesting because it's a little different playstyle in Scorn.
Yeah. she is certainly a fun caster. Don't get me wrong. You play her balls to the wall and you just go. And that has its own merit, but I don't think it's competitive. Because good players will see what is actually going on and will not fall for it.
Yep. But it's also, she does create situations too where you can't, you have to position differently to counter what she does with her feet and the work that she can do on the, you know, the feet turn herself too. Just moving around and blowing stuff up. And
Her feet, I want to like her feet. I really do. But I've tried her with bronze back, without bronze back, with mullet karn and bronze back. I think mullet karn is mandatory with her. I like her taking her with the Arcadon because that gives her some sprint shenanigans. But like, man, like she wants to do work. She really, really wants to do work, and it could be such an uphill climb because you're like, okay, I'm gonna spend this Arcadon Animus, and then like by the next thing you know, you've now committed 10 points to just support her, if not more. And suddenly basically she's doing the work that 10 points would be doing. And you're like, okay, so now I have just put my caster out there to do the same work as what I would have used this 10 points I normally would have, except my caster doesn't buff my army.
I just wanted to say, not to be devil's advocate here, but how many points of Butcher 3's army goes into supporting him to get him to kill everything? She is no Butcher 3, but...
She does not rope, like, 3 heavies in and murder them. She will rope a heavy in, and by rope, I mean she will charge it, and then it will die, and then she will hopefully have popped feet in order to escape.
Now I'm not an expert at Butcher 3, but if I remember correctly, the last time I saw you play Butcher 3, he also did not rope in 3 heavies and kill them. He roped in 3 heavies, but they did not die.
when you roll dice like that, there's only so much that can be done.
And I think that illustrates the problem with both Makeda 3 and Butcher 3 and casters that are like that. If your game plan is to get your caster in there to do work, and you have a cascading dice failure where you have lots of bad dice in a roll, like you just auto lose. It doesn't happen often.
Yep.
But if you go for an assassination that where you don't have to commit your caster, and then that doesn't go your way, or you have a cascading dice failure, you don't lose the game. A lot of times you end up losing the game anyway, and it takes longer, but at least you have a chance to fight out of it.
And you can always go for a last-ditch assassination run on something. So like oftentimes you can still, even though it might be poor dice odds, you can still always try and make a comeback. Because you can still, at that point, you can often, you realize that the game is over as far as like the attrition fight goes, and at that point, you're just starting to jockey for assassination.
Yep, absolutely. But I think actually, you kind of touched on something. I think Mullet Karn is sort of required for all 3 Makedas.
Only Makeda 1, I would argue, because I like a Mammoth build without a Mullet Karn in, because then it frees up Mullet Karn to go into a different list.
You mean Makeda 1, you would put a Mammoth, no yeah, Mullet.
I like to run the Mammoth over Mullet Karn in Makeda 1 because of the work that she can make it do.
Yeah, you definitely can do that. I'm just saying, I guess I shouldn't say it's mandatory with her. That's just the way I like to play her.
He is certainly amazing in that case. There's nothing like 11-inch Fate Walkers to just ruin people's day.
Yep. My favorite thing is to take something for nothing. That's what I like to do. So.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people will be like, they'll play the game and they'll do the, well, if I can trade 6 points for 10 points, I'm coming out ahead and I'm happy. I like to play the game where I kill 4 points and you get nothing in return, and I'd like to do that a few times before we actually get into the game. I'm a very much I'll sandpaper and kill a few things and try and get ahead, because the thing about War Machine and Hordes is it's very much a game that cascades. Once you get ahead, you have more points to attack with and make attacks with. You sort of, you know, just you end up just kind of riding that tide.
Yeah,
so
it's a game that'll predict the winner. The only difference is that because the assassination exists, then people people who are behind can still pull out a win, especially if played well.
Well, my question to what you just said, John, is if that's true, is the reason that you don't play Circle is because you don't want to have to learn from Crump?
No, I just never picked them up. Actually, Circle would be a really good fit for me, I think, faction wise. I just have limited time right now, so I'm sort of I don't know. Circle's pretty well explored. I mean, Will Pagani's playing Circle. Colin Hill plays Circle. And I don't like to be part of a big pack. I kind of like to do my own thing. Not that I have like special snowflake syndrome or anything, but I do think there is value in playing things that people have not practiced against or are not familiar with. Or, you know, if you watch people like Chuck Elswick play, he's always playing off the wall stuff, and he always does really well because it's difficult to play optimally against something that you don't have experience playing against. And
yeah,
so
strong strength of Scorn is Scorn is like Kador, except they are blindingly fast.
It's like Kador fixed.
Yes.
Except for their casters. Their caster strength is not as great.
That is true.
So what you're saying then is that Chuck Elswick isn't a good player. He just knows how to play things that people aren't familiar with?
Amazing player. He always plays really solid, and he almost never makes a mistake when I watch him play. He just plays a really solid game. But what I'm saying is he garners an advantage because he often plays things that people aren't used to playing against. And it's maybe not a huge advantage because there's certainly, you know, we all play a lot of games. But, I mean, you know, if you've never played against a high reclaimer, like that is a completely different – you have to approach that game completely differently. And it takes one or two games to figure out maybe how you need to approach that.
I definitely agree with you there because I know what's his name? Andy took a little stint into Menoth, and he was in love with Testament. He would run Testament, and he would just murder people with him.
Yeah.
I mean, you just bring back this Cav wherever he wanted, and then charge your caster, and you're dead. And that was it.
Yep.
And it was almost, I mean, nigh impossible to stop.
I think the only other person with a feat like that's like Maelok. And that's not even bringing him back. That's making him incorporeal.
Yeah. Not even close.
Yeah, I know.
And also, then you have to field Maelok.
Right.
Yeah, but with Maelok, you get to revive Gatorman Posse. And I can tell you from experience
that Gatormans are awesome.
Nothing like Gatorman for revive targets. Holy buckets, those guys are bonkers.
Yeah, those guys do some work.
Yeah,
a lot. They do. Yeah, I see yours all the time.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I would like to steer back to Scorn to keep us a little bit on talk.
Well, we were talking about Gatorman.
Yeah, that's true. They're the best in Scorn. But there's something specific that came to mind that I wanted to talk about. When I said about Kador having a really good caster lineup, I think most people feel that Scorn's caster lineup is pretty subpar. But I think that a lot of times in the game we get so hung up on the casters that we play that we don't take enough time to invest in the army that we play with them. Because there's a lot of when you watch top level or high level play in the games, you see the way that people play. They really just only give up as much as they feel they have to give up in order to get an expected return from it. And that's not something that's really talked about a lot on casts, is actually playing the army and the value of playing the army that you're put in front of versus just the caster that you have out there. So if it's possible, can you touch on how maybe you play Scorn in relation to that or you know, how you get optimum use out of different situations when you're sitting down in front of your Scorn army, or how you design your list to take objectives, or how to play your pieces to actually accomplish the trades
that you're hoping to get value out of?
Well, yeah, I can talk a little bit to that. So when I play Scorn, and I haven't played Scorn a ton, I play some. The casters that I like to play are casters that give me an attrition advantage. So I like to play Makeda too, which is weird to say that she gives you an attrition advantage, considering that she's known for the bullet.
Oh, she sure as hell does.
What's that?
She sure as hell does. She lets you alpha strike everything.
Yeah, you get to hit so hard and so fast, and I mean it's you can put a devastating alpha on somebody and then just cascade to victory. So I do something very similar with Lilith too. A lot of people try to use Lilith 2 to assassinate you, but I use Lilith 2 when I play her to kill your entire army, and then it's just a matter of mopping up for the rest of the game. And I try to manufacture the same kind of thing with Makeda, and then you have the added, actually both those casters actually draw parallels to each other, because you have the added bonus of I'm going to threaten your caster until I fire my gun, which is my feet.
Yep.
Well, I guess you don't really need the feat to assassinate their casters in Makeda's case, but it does help.
It sure makes it a hell of a lot easier.
It really does. It really does. So what you find is the threat of the assassination will keep their casters at bay or out of the game. Or if they put them into the game, sometimes you get free wins. So, I mean, that's the other reason why I like to play Makeda 2 and Lilith 2 for that same reason, is when you're playing a six-round tournament, getting a top of two kill, you know, or a bottom of one kill that they don't expect, and you just end the game, gives you like an hour and a half to go get something to eat or decompress or rest or not have stress, or, and it's a big advantage throughout the day. And you won't get those often, but if you don't even have the option to get them in your list pair, because I play Protector a lot and I often don't have an assassination option, and by the end of the day I'm pretty beat up and worn out, because a lot of my games are, you know, hour and 20-minute slugfests where I just sort of grind them out. And Chad and I have talked about that quite a bit. He feels the same way about Trolls. So that's one of the reasons why I reach for Makeda too. And then the other caster I like to play is Mordekar, because I find his feat, the +3 defense, is pretty big in the attrition game. And then Revive over time ends up putting you pretty far ahead if you can make sure that you engineer your units not getting completely wiped out. So it is a total disaster if somebody focus fires one unit completely down. You pretty much ought to lose with Mordekar. So that's like the whole game.
yeah,
but
you can put some guys in places they have no right belonging.
Yeah,
and like putting a single berserking annihilator into like the worst possible position when they thought they were safe is, that can just be absolutely devastating.
Yeah, absolutely. And then he also has a really, really good scalpel in, what's the spell? Essence Blast, is that it?
Yeah, Essence Blast is the
yeah.
Yeah,
so
spray.
He's got a scalpel, too, that he can use to remove really annoying things, like the Blood Witch is kind of no problem to remove, or the Blood Hag is what I meant. So yeah, so those are the two casters. That was the list pair that I was kind of playing around with. Some of the other casters are interesting. Xerxes is nice because he does something a little different in that he asks a really hard question,
yeah.
Which is, you know, can you chew through my stuff before I kill everything you love? Because it's very tanky and bricky.
Yep.
And then obviously Hexie 2 is a very good all-comers caster. I really like to build his lists to abuse Blackspot.
Yeah, I'm definitely in that same boat of Hexie is my go-to caster for someone for any, if I'm unsure what list they may pick, although usually lists pretty broadcast themselves as far as factions go, but usually if I have any doubt as to what I might be playing, Hexorus 2 is such a stable drop that because he can handle pretty much any situation. I tend to play him a little beast heavy, and I tend to. Blackspot lets me kill infantry, and he does such good work killing infantry that I just take to the other things that can kill heavies.
Yeah, I actually played at Gen Con 2 or 3 years ago with Hexie 2 and all beasts was the entire list with 2 units of Pain Givers. That was it. That was the list. And I played against Madrak 2 with 1 million dudes. I played against Krios 2, theme force with like 6 units of Knights Exemplar. I played against Butcher 2, his theme force with like a million Doom Reaper, like all of these nightmare matchups. And actually, all of those, like, spammed Weapon Masters is pretty bad against a lot of heavies. So I had to play a super conservative game where I would send one heavy in at a time, and I would use, like, Ashes to Ashes and other things to sort of, like, clear out an area to where he'd only get charged by a couple guys. And then I would rinse and repeat, and then the guy that got, that took the charges that turn would come to the back, and I'd rotate in another beast. So it was Tiberian and Moloch Karn sort of switching back and forth in that position. And then while I was killing their guys, I was healing the other one back up. But it was a very, very, very precarious. All of those games were very precarious. But I ended up winning all of them because Hexia is that powerful where you can kind of, you have to apply your army to the situation. And he almost always has a way to apply in a way that is pretty powerful and has game. So I took really big advantage because, you know, spanned Weapon Masters means my advantage in that game. My disadvantage is like 2 or 3 guys can kill a beast with spiked rolls. So you have to be really careful. My advantage is every time I kill one of those, I heal a point.
Yeah.
And so if I can, you know, if I can kill 40 Weapon Masters throughout a game, that gives me an additional extra beast to play with for that entire game if I'm not dumb and get them killed outright.
Just as an aside, that guy that you're talking about is one of our locals.
What's that?
The guy with the 6 units of Knights Exemplar.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of our locals.
Rick side both of them, right?
Yep. That's him.
Yep. So I'm a big fan of Rick's. I played him at Adepticon 3 years ago and Gen Con 2 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, I still remember our game with Rick. He's such a sweet dude, but he looked at me and said, I don't know if I'll ever beat you. You've never played Scorn before. And you beat my best list with a list that you've really never played except for today. And I'm like, it's just experience, you know, and a little bit of luck here and there. And
some savage cheating.
Yeah. What's that?
And some savage cheating. Are you talking about?
Well, yeah, that's true. I don't think I cheated against him, though.
You did.
I don't think I had the extra savage. What's that?
You sure did.
Oh, did I?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's all right. It'll make him feel better.
I don't know. I didn't cheat against him because I only cheated in the first 2 rounds.
Oh, was he?
And it was Tom Hoffman and Chuck Ellswick. And because I went and I self-reported, and Hacksaw grabbed both those guys and said, "What do you want to do?" And they both said, "Just we want to leave the game state way it is because we don't want to have to repair the entire tournament." And they both said that they didn't think the Savage would have mattered in either game. So
fair, but I didn't
cheat against Rick. I remember that now.
I did want to give a shout-out to Rick because he has been busy of late and he hasn't had a chance to play as much as he used to. So, you know, getting him on, or at least a name drop on there for him, I think he well deserves going to some of these events. So
he's a very solid player. I actually remember talking to him at Gen Con. He was like, oh, man, because it was a 75-point Masters. He's like, I don't have 75 points. I'm like, dude, you should just borrow some models and play in Gen Con Masters. And he's like, I don't know. I'm like, I don't know. If it were me, I wouldn't want to be driving home on Sunday going, what if I could have played in Gen Con Masters, but I didn't bother to try and find some models. So he ended up playing at Masters, and he told me later that one of the reasons why he decided to actually try and find models was that the way I just kind of put it to him that, you know, it's an opportunity, and then it's not one you're going to get often. You know, it's not like you can just show up and just qualify for Masters. I mean, that's kind of a big deal, so...
Well, what I kind of was hoping to get into was more not at all the casters, but more like sort of what you were just talking about, how you were able to set up, or how are you able to set up across the table, you know, the situations where you're able to not, you know, lose those war beasts to all those weapon masters, or how do you know how many is the right number of trooper models to feed to your opponent so that they don't get much, and so that you can counter-strike back harder.
So let's talk about that. In that example with Epic Hexy against spammed Weapon Masters, your beast handlers become a lot lower value because you don't need a free charge or +2 strength to kill any of that stuff. Because if you don't have reach, your free charge doesn't buy you anything because you're going to run out of guys to kill before you run out of fury, typically.
Man, Black Spot turns on those guys so good.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. Like, you really, really don't need beast handlers for their intended purpose, which is a free charge and plus two strength. So how do you repurpose them to make them good? Well, they definitely gum up charge lanes because they have reach, and they're dangerous on a free strike, and you force people to deal with them first before they get to your beasts. So what I did was I Ashen Veiled those guys, and I put them in front of my beasts and forced them to try and deal with them. And then because they have reach and everything, it really shuts down a lot of charge lanes if you position them well. And it's sort of one of those things where if I hadn't done that, I would have taken a lot more charges, because I used both of those units for that purpose. Pretty much that's what they did, was just gum up charge lanes and force you to, because if you think about it, when there's spammed weapon masters like that, they have to activate a whole unit at a time. So they have to activate an entire unit and go in and try and kill your guys and not get in the way of other guys trying to charge through.
Yep.
So you just sort of create situations, and then you sort of pick them off and try to take advantage of the other advantages you have, like vampiric reaving, I guess, like I talked about. But so that's just like one minor example, I guess. The other thing I like to do is I like to put annihilators like two or three forward. Again, same thing. Those guys cover a lot of distance, and they can't just leave those guys alone. So they actually have to kill them, and they kind of to gum everything up, and then you put the leader and the rest of the unit, you know, the leader back a ways, and then the rest of the unit behind that, so that you don't have to take everything in the face. So I see new players do this a lot. When they have charges, they charge in with everything, and say their opponent has kind of given them three guys to charge. Well, they send in eight annihilators into three guys, and by golly, those three guys all die. And then the eight annihilators turn around and get killed, right? So your goal is to try to get people to overcommit to you and you not to overcommit to them. That's a lot of the game. It's positioning and piece trading and figuring out, okay, how much force do I want to apply in this instance? What can I get away with applying? And what can I get away with? What's the minimum amount of stuff I can give you in return for what I'm taking from you?
And how much is too much?
Yeah. And which, as an aside, is why guns are so powerful in the game. Because often you can get something for nothing with a gun, but you can't do the kind of work you can do with melee. So melee can often do more damage because of charges and that kind of stuff, and they tend to be higher power. But guns tend to give you some reach, and they also prevent problems. Like, charge lanes are actually a huge problem in applying force of a unit. So, yeah, anyway.
This has been Keith.
This has been Will.
This is Tyler.
And this has been John.
See you later. This is Gun Bunny signing out. Thank you, John.
Jesus Christ! I warned you.
So we better not risk another frontal assault. That rabbit's dynamite.